SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, about 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Andy Serling will join us in just a little bit. But first, this conversation with young horseman Reeve McGahee, who's got about as good a resume and as good a pedigree as anybody can have wanting to go out into the industry and train horses. And as the son of Shug and the nephew of Charlie and Amy Lopresti, this is one of the really nice stories of the past week, even under these stressful conditions. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome and congratulate Reeve McGahee on his first professional training win. Reeve, well done.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Reeve, you know, it's one of those things, you know they're going to come. It took, what, 8 starts, but, you know, just talk about, going to Oaklawn this year and, the circumstance and the timing of basically, starting out on your own.
Yeah, we kind of came to a decision last spring that we'd take some horses for Mr. Anthony, and then the goal would be to go to Oaklawn Park in the winter, and then I'd start out on my own from there. So I'd been working for my dad for the past 4 or 5 years and worked for Charlie for 4 or 5 years before that. So just the timing seemed to be right to start something new.
You know, one of the really intriguing parts of the story, of course, you mentioned Mr. Anthony and John Ed, instrumental at the start of your father's career.
Yeah, he played a big role. Three of the Phippses, he was probably the biggest client he had and was a big part of his early success.
The Loblolly at that time, now Short Leaf, and of course one of the best known owners and breeders in Arkansas and in the game for decades on end. And this particular first win, it just happens that to tie it back to Charlie Lopresti and a horse of his that ends up being the owner line for Frank and Jimmy. What elements of the background, Reeve, that you rely on? Talk a little bit about forming the basis of a trainer's comprehension of how to approach the shed row, how to approach the sport, how to deal with owners, and talk about the influence of your father and Charlie.
No, it was good. Luckily, kind of both places. A lot of the people that worked there were people that had worked there for a long time before that and continue to work there. So as far as being around the people, everybody, they're all good people. And it's kind of everybody there, for the most part, is pretty easy to get along with. So both groups kind of work together really well. So that gives you a good sense of how things are supposed to function. And same thing, both places, they're lucky to have, for the most part, lucky to have good owners that kind of allowed them to do as they wanted, and that makes it easier to do right by the horses when you don't have the pressure of somebody trying to tell you otherwise. Not necessarily because they mean any harm by it, but maybe they just don't fully understand the process of everything. But so I think both jobs and experiences gave me a good idea of how I wanted to do things and the way I feel like they should be done. For me.
That's really the perfect follow-up when you say for you, because you also form your own opinions and you know, your follow your own intuition. How do the approaches differ? I should also mention you worked early on with Owen Hardy as well, and you know, how do you blend the various approaches to create your own approach?
Yeah, no, working for Owen was a good experience too. You got a kind of little bit of a different feel than working for my dad or working for Charlie. You know, the first summer I worked there, we had Desert Party, Ronaldo the Wizard, Horse Named Coronet of the Baron, and those were all 2-year-olds that were good 2-year-olds. One first time out, and went on to compete in stakes and win stakes, and obviously Ronaldo the Wizard, he continued on to be a good horse all the way until he's about 10 years old. But so that gave me I was young at the time, so I probably didn't fully grasp everything that was going on, but it gave me a good idea of getting those 2-year-olds ready to run. And he's aggressive with the 2-year-olds. When they go over there, they were ready, and they were also nice horses too. So, I think I got a kind of well-rounded background and a little bit of feel for everything, and been able to kind of piece together what I like about each system and try to put it into what we do.
What was your first? What was your earliest memory of the racetrack and being around the sport?
My earliest memories were with my mom, because she was training horses at Keeneland when we moved back to Kentucky when I was 3, 4, 5 years old. So my earliest experiences were going around to all the racetracks around Kentucky and Ohio with her and going to the races and going to the barn before and after school and those sort of things.
When did you pretty much know that you were going to go in this direction?
I started to think, I guess as old as you can be, to start formulating an idea of what you want to do. I mean, I was probably 10, 11, 12 years old where this is what I dreamed about. Obviously, playing professional basketball wasn't going to be an option, so or any other really professional sport. So this is always what I dreamed about doing from that point on.
And of course, your brother involved as well in and around the game. He's with Keeneland, and the name, the family name, just synonymous with just an excellence. And I got to ask about Charlie too again, because you were right directly involved handling Wise Dan during his career, right?
Yeah, I was lucky enough every time that he traveled anywhere, his groom didn't really like to travel that much, so whenever he went anywhere out of town, I'd always go with him, and most of my mornings there were spent with him. So spent a lot of time around him and learned a lot from a horse like that.
Well, and that, that's one of those experiences that can't be, obviously with the kinds of horses your father has, had over the years, but, there's plenty of similar evidence of handling, good horse, but, maintaining one for an extended period, that's one of the great challenges. And, certainly, not just maintaining him, but bringing him back after, a serious health scare. That was, probably a tremendous lesson as well. I mean, you certainly have got a set of experiences, Reeve, that are would be difficult to duplicate.
Yeah, no, he breathed different air than the rest of them. He was tough as they come.
Do you swing by Charlie's and Amy's and see him now and then?
Yeah, usually whenever I'm in town, I try to go by there and see him at least once.
The circumstances, of course, that everybody's operating under, this is such a unique and difficult situation, Reeve, and the uncertainty about the meets in Kentucky, both obviously Keeneland canceled And, you know, we're assuming that Churchill will delay. It's hard to know. But how are you reacting? And you know, as you're looking at about what, about another 5 weeks of the meet there. What do you project in terms of how you handle things going forward?
Well, I think right now we're kind of carrying on as normal because we're fortunate enough here that we're able to run. So, yeah, we have spots picked up, so we'll continue on as normal until they tell us not to. Maybe a couple of the things that aren't going to make the end of the meet here, you know, we've kind of backed off of because it doesn't look like there's going to be anywhere necessarily to take them after May 2nd right now. But the ones that have spots picked up, and they're carrying on as normal. And after they run, then we'll kind of see where we're at and make a decision on how what we do with them then. But so far, we've been lucky. So hopefully things will stay status quo down here. And then whenever this meet ends, then we'll start making a decision on where we need to go from there.
Any aspect that has surprised you? Is there any part of the job and you know, being, you know, having your name on the program, is there any part of it that has surprised you?
I don't think not necessarily. I'd say not that the stress level wasn't high before, but I'd say it's a little higher now, but not too much. No, I think we carry on pretty much the same as I did when I was working for my dad for the most part. Just a few little differences, but nothing major.
Well, of course, you know, being there at Oaklawn, how much experience had you had going to Hot Springs?
I had never been here, no. When I pulled in on January 18th, that's the first time I'd seen it. So just kind of acclimating to that too now. So I think we're fully acclimated now, but meet's almost over.
Well, how many more runners do you expect to send out between now and May 2nd?
Hopefully four or five. We've got four circled, and when the new book comes out, hopefully there'll be a race for a fifth one, and which I think there will be. And as long as he's ready, then hopefully everybody will make it, and we'll get to run four or five more.
Have you also thought about how you're going to position yourself in terms of taking on new clients and building the business?
Yeah, obviously, we're open for business, so it's a little bit of a pickle right now, not knowing exactly when we'll get back to Kentucky or stall space when we get there, but those are all, they'll figure themselves out. So, but yeah, no, hopefully as the summer goes on, and we'll be able to expand a little bit.
Well, Reeve McGahey, delighted for this first win, first of countless, and well done, continued success, and look forward to, you know, seeing you at Saratoga, at wherever, Keeneland, Churchill, wherever you end up next, given the circumstances, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're just taking it day by day right now.
Reeve McGahey, everybody, and first of many wins, and for his family, for his mother, and for Shug, and for his aunt and uncle, Amy and Charlie. Pretty outstanding pedigree, and going to obviously have, you know, plenty of opportunity going forward. And the circumstances this under the current banners right now, a little challenging, but we'll see it through. And Reeve, can people? I can't remember if I've seen you twittering. Are you out there?
I have a Twitter. I don't really post on it. I just use it for the news and reading. But it's just my name, John Reeve McGahey. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
I just pulled it up, and there it is. All right. Well, now we'll get you some followers, and you can start to interact. And if anybody wants to talk to Reeve about picking out some young horses later this spring and sending him some, you can reach him. Reach out to him right there on Twitter. There's an option. Reeve, continued success. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Reeve McGahee, and you can follow him at J. Reeve McGahee. There you go. Yeah, see, something you just don't know. Everybody uses their name differently, so when you put it in, sometimes you don't find him. But there he is, and we follow each other now. We'll take a break here. Andy Serling is going to join us next, and we'll catch up with Andy, and he's going to be back on the broadcasts this weekend. After a couple of weeks, he himself has been kind of health quarantined, health sequestered. He was sick before this thing even, he'd had a little, you know, kind of a rough winter himself, even before this thing started to percolate. Taking a break here into hour three, Andy Serling next.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRFSports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come? With your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun?
We're back at the races, about 13 into hour three on this Tuesday. And to New York we go. And Andy Serling from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I've actually picked up momentum as the morning has gone on, and
I'm glad.
Yeah, started a little logy. This is.
Oh, yeah, that big night's sleep.
I literally. I'll send out the picture Tina took of me passed out. 15 hours.
So that must be exciting.
Yeah,
nothing like a picture of somebody sleeping.
Well, thank God she didn't tape me snoring, which
I don't know if you can hear people snoring in pictures. I could be wrong.
Well, it could be, you know, it could be one of those live action shots that you can.
Is there an Andy Warhol 8-hour movie of a guy sleeping?
I don't know that.
There's a movie called Sleep by Andy Warhol.
Oh, very cool.
I'll look it up right now, which I believe is like 6.5 hours or something that somebody's sleeping.
Oh, that's funny.
Sleep, Andy Warhol film, 1964. It's 5 hours and 20 minutes. It's loop footage of somebody sleeping.
Well, I will not to try to compete with that.
I'm not going to try to watch it. There were a lot of weird movies back in the 60s.
Absolutely.
I remember, as a kid, I was obsessed by movies that people saw. And I remember my parents, my sister going to the dead at Fillmore East on her birthday in 1970. My parents going in, I think they went to see a Warhol movie, Trash. Those creepy movies back in the 60s, weird movies. Shouldn't say creepy. But I think Joe D'Alessandro. Anyway, what's going on in the world of racing? How's your guest been?
Good. I mean, we dealt in the first hour, particularly with, each day I want to have somebody that can provide some insights. And we talked to Andy Simoff about the transport issues and moving horses around under this, circumstance. And then Louis Carvajal joined us with a firsthand account of, what went on in Dubai and getting Imperial Hint to home. And he and Mr. Mamone are just hopeful that now they can focus on maybe trying to win a third straight Vanderbilt. That's their goal for the year now. But a pretty harrowing situation. I mean, and you and I talked about this last week, right? I mean, that this was kind of an audacious concept that they were going to make people travel from around the world under these circumstances.
I was surprised with people, and you and I talked about it, shipping. But at the end of the day, we just hope all the people and horses are safe. So, what decisions we make and how they affect us, it doesn't really matter beyond a point, right? Once you've made them, you made them,
Right.
We've all seen people make decisions that we wouldn't have made, and they've turned out well for them, right? So, easy to second guess.
Well, one of the things we also discussed in the last hour, Reed McGahee just joined us. A lot of fun to congratulate him on his first career win,
awesome.
First of many. Yeah, very cool. And he had also spent time with Charlie McGahee, Charlie Libresti, his uncle.
Worked and, for him for a while, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 4 or 5 years, and then 4 or 5 years with Shug. You want to talk about a pedigree to succeed, certainly. One of the funniest parts of this is how here he is starting his career with one of the owners that was instrumental in launching his father's career, John Ed Anthony, the Lob Lolly back then.
Yeah. He owned Van Landingham.
Van Landingham. That was the first
Last Trump. Last Trump was the horse that Shug won the test with, I want to say 84. No, 84. One of those summers was Syntron. That may have been 83. Let's look. 84 was Sintra. Last Trump was 83, but it was not Lob Lolly. That was when, I think that's when Shug first came to Saratoga, summer of 83.
That's got to be.
Landingham was probably a 2-year-old. I don't know how much he ran. He was actually one of the favorites in the Derby, right? He got hurt in the Rebel. It was out a period of time after that. Van Landingham, that is.
That's there's countless horses that I talk about with Shug. Typically more so, Phipps and Janney runners, but
Bob Van Lanning had was incredible.
Yeah, we should. I mean, we should. That's one that we should.
Yeah, she was incredible. He was an incredible horse. I remember he won the DC International. I think it was his turf debut, in an absolute bomb, like 10 lengths, 8 lengths or something. He was quite the horse. I think he won his best older horse.
Absolutely. It was older male in 85.
Yeah.
In fact, boy, look at this. That was some year. Won the Jockey Club Gold Cup, the Foster, the Suburban, the DC International, and the Canadian Turf.
Yeah.
Actually, won the Canadian Turf the next year, so that was 86. But that's got like a round table, almost a round table esque, kind of a season.
Well, it's funny, Shug was running a horse last summer. That horse that Brad Cox had won the Discovery in 18, and he laid up after that.
Plainsman,
I think. Coming back at Saratoga, and Shug had him. And I remember we were interviewing him, and I remember I said to the producer, you should have, I think Acacia was talking to him, said you should have her talk to him about Van Lanningham, because it's, just interesting to see them out together. And he was, always happy to talk about a horse like that. I see that Shug won the test in 83 and the Ballerina in 84 with Last Trump. She came back the next year and won the Ballerina. Love Sign did that in 80-81 as well. A number of horses did that. Lady Secret won them both as a 3-year-old, as did Bill Mott with that good horse. What's her name? Dream Supreme.
For Kinsman.
Yep. All right. Yeah. She did a 3-year-old. Five 3-year-olds won the Ballerina.
I liked her a lot.
Dream, she was tremendous.
Yeah, very good.
Very, very good horse. Very good horse. She won the heavy favorite. Daydream Supreme won was Honest Lady. Tried to count the dead rail. Didn't work out very well. Stop Traffic. Dam of. Stop Traffic won this race in 98. Mandela had her. Rick Schlossberg had Stop Traffic when she broke her maiden in New York. She's the Dam of Cross Traffic.
Yes.
Arena's got some crazy good names of horses that won it. Merrifield won it. Both of hers just won first time out for Christophe, the notorious RGB. So what does everybody think of the races this weekend?
I think people were just relieved. I mean, that we ran. It is amazing, Andy. I and obviously New York with the unfortunate case of a couple of the backstretch employees that tested positive. And I asked. I don't know if you heard last week. I had Pat McKenna on, and Pat. Just sort of acknowledge that it is a fair question as to, what circumstances would allow New York to resume. And actually, I talked to Gary this morning, asking Gary, what he's hearing. And he says there's really not a lot of that. That's not the priority right this second. But
hard to know.
Yeah. So in the meantime, though, you got the shows. The shows went off. Quite nicely over the weekend.
Yeah, we have shows scheduled for throughout the weekend, this coming weekend on FS2, FS1, and I assume some FS2 as well. I'm actually going to be on this weekend. I'm going to go to Aqueduct and sit by myself at Aqueduct. I'll be about the only person there besides a couple security guards and the guys in the TV truck. And there aren't that many of them. I hope people realize the shows are not going to have the same bells and whistles they normally have. I think, the small number of people that are working, obviously, to keep a distance and stuff, is just a very different circumstance. And obviously, those people are doing a remarkable job in getting it out there. I'll be in the studio by myself or whoever we have set up on the other third floor. on Saturday, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Looking forward to getting back and doing something.
Well, and
I'll probably take the A train.
Yeah, no, good point.
No subways for me.
I haven't even asked our son in Brooklyn. Are they running? How fully are the trains running?
Steve,
fully?
They're running. I haven't been on one of them 2.5 weeks. So I wouldn't know.
Right.
But I'm staying in. I was out last Wednesday. I did go outside 6 weeks ago. Thinking I should go outside today or tomorrow too.
Well, you missed the up here. We ended up with 6 inches of snow overnight. So,
sure. My mom just emailed me and told me the same.
Idiotic.
I mean, this morning.
Just nuts.
Have you been out and, you know, walks? Are you
gonna
go out?
Tina took care of it. She's amazing. She
is she picking up some money around the neighborhood?
Yeah, exactly. She's.
You're inside good. Working. The least she could do is do her part to help out.
I'll tell her that'll be good for the smile of the day.
We got rain. We did not get any snow.
All right.
Not that I would really notice, unless I looked out my window, which I could.
Well, what did you make? Let's talk about the action at Fairgrounds, and I had Brad Cox yesterday, obviously, to made it easy to do some summarizing.
Pretty well down there, huh?
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, once again, Florent Giroux is sort of, I mean, no other riders are noticing that Florent is sort of embarrassing them out there. He just goes and everybody else takes back.
Yeah.
What was the point with the horse that ran? I guess they rode for second because that was fast. That New York traffic horse, and they put blinkers on.
Yeah,
they made no attempt. It was a very moderate pace. You know, keep in mind that the first quarter is run down straightaway, so 23.3 is not fast at all. And you know, they just waltzed around up front. And, I mean, basically nobody really changed positions the whole race, right? And even modernists who actually ran better in this race than the time before, I would say it was a step. We're not surprised he took a step forward. Don't know how good the race was, you know. Got a 91 buyer. And, I mean, the winner's a hard horse to take overly seriously because at some point other horses, you know, who knows what the Triple Crown's going to look like, but there are going to be races in all likelihood, like Belmont Stakes and the Preakness and Travers and Haskell and whatever. And the Derby eventually also, you know, who knows what order and when they'll be, where people are actually going to be more interested in trying to win and they're going to be more aggressive up towards the front end. And it's hard to take the winner overly seriously because he didn't run a figure that's fast enough to do any real damage. And we know Baffert's got some horses out there with some speed. And so going forward, it's hard to be overly enthusiastic about that horse, right? But he sure dominated that race. But you do wonder, like, it's almost like, you know, Ferrant has discovered, right, this magic elixir of just being aggressive, and it's done worked so well for him in Triple Crown. Like, why are more riders not doing that, Steve? Is nobody noticing, you know, the damage that he's been doing in races by being aggressive recently? More power to him, frankly, but...
It's strange, and I also wonder, and we did speculate, a lot of people talking about the race going in, the mile and 3/16 element, you know, these horses stretching out, you know, to a you know,
they
quote
let
unquote class.
Even slower up front.
Exactly.
That's always good for closers.
it's a perversion
of the truth. Which is, you know, that's why, right, it's easier to wire at 7 furlongs than 6 furlongs because, you know, the paces is just generally are slower because there's some sort of mistaken assumption that, oh, a speed horse can't get 7 furlongs but can at 6. Well, no. Paces are what allow horses to get distances, right? These horses all have a reasonable amount of stamina. You know, Major Fed seems to be the one who ran particularly well in there. It's hard to look at that race and say, boy, I'm dying to bet any of these horses going forward when the going gets tougher. That's really the only thing I took out of it. I don't want to be overly tough on them, but, I mean, who's right to bet Wells Bayou when the going gets tougher? Not me.
I agree about Major Fed, too, and the, you know, the oddity, and it's going to be, the jury's obviously going to be out this year. This was kind of a noble experiment by Fairgrounds to, you know, extend the distance.
Why was it noble?
Because they tried something new, essentially. I mean, they were doing something that, you know, that nobody had really, I hadn't heard it, you know, discussed
was
anywhere else.
Clamoring for people to have races longer than a mile and eighth?
I think that their notion was that, you know, the fact that the Oaks participants have done so well coming out of New Orleans, you know, year after year, and that for whatever reason the Derby pattern has been, you know, somewhat lacking, and less productive, and so I don't know, being that, you know, we're in this era now where horses run in the Tampa Bay Derby. And you know, then aren't going to run until the first Saturday in May, and this race too.
Well,
right.
First of all, the notion that horses from the Fairgrounds have done well in the Oaks. This is it's random. People are so continuously fooled by randomness. It's like the Wood Memorial is a bad prep for the Kentucky Derby.
Well,
they're just being pulled by randomness. Was it bad that what's his name got injured and retired? Escondurea?
I Want Revenge.
How about horses that finished second and third? How about Cloud Computing coming back and winning the Preakness?
Toby, the one that got hurt on route.
Right, it's randomness. It's you know, it happens to be. So you're going to tell me that if American Pharoah had sold the auction, and he had gone to Todd Fletcher, and Todd Fletcher had decided to run in Florida and then run in the wood, he wouldn't have won the Derby because he ran in the wood? Come on. It's nonsense. It's a matter of randomness. And, you know, and one of the reasons California has done well, obviously, is that Bob Baffert's done very well. That's been the single biggest factor, right? That Bob's gotten the horses, and he's gotten the job done with them. So in the Arkansas Derby is a great race for the until it randomly isn't for 6 years. Now, obviously, this year it's a little bit hard to use any of that nonsense, but to me that's just voodoo. Listen, I don't care the race mile 316th. It turns out it's sort of odd because it's a prep that was supposed to be run 6 weeks before the race, and now, of course, it's being run, you know, almost 6 months before the race, so it doesn't really matter. So an odd year to have tried it. Whatever. It didn't seem to hurt them. They got 14 horses, right?
Yeah.
Fine, but I'm big on history. I don't mind people trying something new. Did it really change the way you look at the race? If it did, you probably didn't bet the speeds and you did poorly. I mean, I used Wells Bayou because I think you always have to use the speed, especially in these races where Florence riding, right? But you know he's going, and you don't know if the others are. And I do wonder, and I'm not trying to beat up on Joe Bravo, but originally Luis Saez was named in the horse. Luis is a much more aggressive rider than Joe is. I wonder if Luis had been on him and they put blinkers on, would he have been more aggressive? Would the race look different, you know?
Yep.
And as soon as I heard the rider change and who was riding, I thought, well, that's a very, very different rider. And listen, maybe Joe did the right thing and got second with a horse that might have been ninth if he had, you know, been aggressively ridden. So I'm not going to sit here and criticize Joe in result, but I think in the way the race was run, it was very possibly run in a different manner because of the riders. I don't think that's unfair.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know, a similar thing, you know, a similar situation in the Muniz when it seems to me that Norm Cassie entered Secretary of War as a rabbit for the second place finisher Don't Blame Rocket. Well, Secretary of War got left, and then the rider didn't do anything to aggressively get him into the race. And so you ended up with yet another very moderate pace. And I'm not saying Bakovitz didn't run well, but with the advantage of cruising up front, his performance was different. If Secretary were broken and been ridden the way you would have thought he would be ridden, then I wonder why people enter rabbits, and then you wonder if their instructions are as strong as they should be. But I don't know. He did break slow, so didn't get a particularly aggressive ride after that, but he did break slow. But that's another race that was completely changed, right? And you think about it, Norm, assuming that was Norm's intention, I never talked to him, but it just seemed obvious. Look at the race, same owners, right? Horse was claimed before this race, clearly a speed, faster in a lot of ways than Factor this early. And, you know, so what happened? So it was reasonable plan, right? Because Lone Flame Rocket ran well to be second. Now, I think that Rock Emperor finished third, ran the best race of anybody under the circumstances, considering where he closed from. But he also got a good ground-saving trip from Joel, who didn't angle out in the later stages. But, you know, these races are, you know, this is, you know, what is the pivotal point of a race? Well, very often it's the start, right?
Sure. Sure.
You know, and it wasn't that race, and not, you know, Factor is obviously an impressive winner. I have no idea where that race came from, but, you know, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that he was able to walk on the front end. You know, Instilled Regard, who was the 2-1 favorite, he didn't get the best of trips or setups, right? And he was, of course, coming off of two perfect trips, you know, a win and a third, I think. And that's so much for the assumption that, well, he has tactical speed. He's a horse that gets himself good trips. Well, no. Horses get good trips, especially in turf races, because not just of what they do, but because of so much of what others do, right? And in this particular case, the others didn't cooperate to allow his perfect trip.
You know who you know we should talk about in there too. I mean, you mentioned Don't Blame Rocket, and Norm Cassie's done a very nice job with that one. But Rock Emperor, who made the 4-year-old debut, this is that feels like it feels like he's somebody that is poised for a big year.
Well, as I said, I think he ran the best race in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And he ran extremely well when he finished third, first time in this country in the Belmont Derby. And something obviously went wrong at Saratoga the next time, and he was out for an extended period of time since the first weekend in August. And, yeah, I think he ran a terrific race. And, you know, look forward to hopefully getting back to some normal racing action. I imagine, you know, this is the kind of horse that Chad Brown is probably trying to win yet another Manhattan with. 1.25 miles looks perfect for him, and no question about it. He ran extremely well in here. Extremely well.
Andy, we'll have you guys will be covering Florida and you know, the big day down there, and you know, probably a little Oaklawn and Tampa, Santa Anita.
I imagine obviously a big day Saturday at Gulfstream, but we intend to carry Tampa and Santa Anita and Oaklawn as well. I'll be on from 4 to 6:30 on Friday and Sunday, I think 4 to 7 on Saturday. But I believe we're on basically all day from 1 until, you know, the end. But they're in shifts. But I'll be on the late shift and looking forward to that, yeah. A lot of races.
I want to ask you, and they'll draw tomorrow, and so we'll start to get excited for Thursday and Friday handicapping. Andy, I spent part of the morning, too, with Jeremy Plunk, and we referenced the archives of Night School, and you're on, you know, more than 2 or 3, I think, over the 7-8 years.
Yeah, you know, I'm guessing, but I'm not going to be invited back as a guest anytime in the near future. But anyway,
what I'd love for you to, we've got about 6-7 minutes. Then Ian Wilkes is going to join us. But
I like Ian. Tell him I said hi.
I will. We're going to talk actually about, you know, Ian and Tracy, very friendly with Bob Manfuso and Katie Voss. And of course, Voss and Manfuso had horses with Carl Nafsker and Wanda. They owned horses and bred some together, including Court Folly. And so I wanted Ian to say some things about the late Bob Manfuso this morning. So,
okay. You were saying you wanted to ask me something?
I did. The opportunity that we're hearing a lot of interest from you know, casual sports fans and sports bettors that are looking to keep themselves occupied. And you know, not that we're, you know, rubbing our hands over this situation to bring in new players. But under the circumstances, we should do everything we can to help people learn the game and, you know, understand its challenges. What do you recommend in terms of reading? Particularly, how do you suggest some people that are now, you know, looking at the game potentially for the first time, what do you suggest they do to indoctrinate themselves?
Well, I'm not great with books because I haven't read that many, but I do think that Andy Byers, you know, Picking Winners is obviously the greatest handicapping book ever written. And, you know, any of Sandy's books are entertaining and filled with nuggets. So that's, I highly recommend those. And Steve Chris' Exotic Betting for, you know, putting together exotic bets, that may be a little advanced for people who are just learning. I mean, listen, I read Picking Winners when I was, what, 70, you know, when I was 12 or 13. So, you know, I mean, I don't see any reason that isn't a being primer. I mean, Ainsley's book, I haven't read it in many, many years, but, you know, and even Steve Davidowitz's book as well, Betting Thoroughbreds. Those are good books. I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to be dismissive of other writers. I just haven't read. Most people have read a lot more than I have. I haven't read that many books. Obviously, the learning curve is tough, like anything, right? It's easy. I mean, I don't care if you're going to try to do something. It requires a lot of attention. Fortunately, people have attention, have time these days, right? But I think reading those books is helpful. It's hard. You know, I'm not a great person to ask as far as, you know, fan education from the very, you know, beginner stage. You obviously want to understand the bets. But I don't know if this is a conversation for your audience either. But the thing about the game is it's not for everybody, right? It's like the analogy, there's an old Jerry Garcia analogy about, I think, buttermilk. You know, that not that many people like it, but those that do like it a lot or something like that. and horse racing falls in that category, right? Maybe backgammon falls in that category too, right? You know,
cribbage. Things,
they're puzzles, right? Yep. And I imagine there are a lot of people out there, if they were exposed to horse racing, would find a real fascination to it, that for a variety of reasons they've never been exposed to it. You know, why are so many people in Saratoga racing fans? Well, because there's this great track there in the summer, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, why did I have a lot of friends in Saratoga that liked racing and not too many in college that did? And I certainly went to college with some people besides my, you know, that other than me that were actually pretty smart. I think people will, some people, I think you hope that people get exposed to it, right? And that switch sort of clicks for them that, like, this is something fascinating to me. This is something interesting. And I don't think that we do that if we dumb things down. This is just my opinion. Others will disagree with this. I think the people that are going to be interested in this ultimately want to look at it from a fairly complicated standpoint. And they're going to pick up on the things that they find interesting. And, you know, speed figures, race setups, how races are run, taking apart races afterwards, watching them. Why did this horse that I didn't think would run well today? Why did this horse I think would run well, didn't run as well as I had hoped or expected? Was my opinion bad, which it often is? Or were circumstances different than I'd expected? You know, take that Muniz, right? I don't feel like my bet on Rock Emperor was a bad bet. I think it was a great bet. I think there are a lot of variations where I win that bet. And he proved it with his third place finish. I'm not saying that I'm not crying and screaming that I should have won. I think it's what, you know, but, you know, if you had bet on Instilled Regard, ask yourself, well, what were the mistakes I made, you know? And I think learning to understand racing. And the person that enjoys horse racing is going to find those things that fascinate them. The idea is showing the races and talking about them enough that people get a little hooked. You know, I always go back to the Triple Crown year of, what year did Orb win? 2014?
It sounds about right.
And that was such a lost opportunity for the game, because clearly Orb winning was a great story, right? You have Shug McGee, the legendary trainer, finally winning his Derby, you know, erasing, you know, helping to erase the disappointment of an easy goer so long before. But, you know, one of the great trainers in the history of the game finally winning, you know, getting the pinnacle in the Derby. Not that if Shug never won a Derby, it would have diminished him in any way. But, you know, it was sort of a great racing moment, right? And all this talk was Orb is the horse, right? You know, the connections, the Phippses, you know, it's Girgani, and, you know, people so involved in the game for so long. And the human interest stories are great. I'm not saying dismiss, but from an educational standpoint, it should have been discussed that this was a true classic meltdown. And that Orb benefited from extraordinary circumstances that really don't arise very often in horse races.
Hasn't arrived since. We haven't seen it since in the Derby.
Right. Well, and it'll happen again at some point. But anyway, the race has changed since. But so subsequently, the horse that ran the best race in there was obviously the Normandy Invasion, who moved way too soon and broke the race apart. But who did you want out of the race? Speeds, right? So what happens? The only horse that was at all engaged in the pace came back in the Preakness, and he won and paid $30. But we didn't do anything about explaining the race. So the average person goes, oh, this Orb, you know, the average person, they told me he was the super horse. You know, it's all random. And then what happens in the Belmont, the horse that set the pace in the Derby comes back, Palace Mountains, He wins. And I'm not saying people would have bet these horses or we absolutely would have picked them or something, but if you'd explained that, instead of people going, oh, it's just random, they would have said, wow, that's really interesting. I didn't bet them today, but I'll bet them next time. And I think that's how you help unlock the mysteries of the game
by
explaining things in a very logical way. Someone will say that's too complicated. It's not. It's not too complicated. People are bright, and the people that are interested will learn. And the people that don't, I'm not sure it really matters. You know, I'm not saying you don't want to talk to a wide audience, but talk to the whole audience, right? Don't just do these personal interest, human interest stories at the expense of not explaining horse racing. Do them both.
No doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, there's
people trying to learn. I don't want to cut into Ian's time anymore, so I'm going to go.
That was great, though.
But that's
thank
where
you.
I stand on that. Okay.
No, it was perfect. Perfect.
We have an obligation. Anyway, talk to you soon. It's been great.
Andy Serling, everybody. And you'll be looking forward to Andy this weekend on the Fox 1 and 2 and the extensive coverage that continues again this weekend. I think we'll stay here, and Andy, we'll catch up with you later. I think we'll stay, Casey. It's crazy to stop now, so why don't you get Ian, and we'll close out the morning with Ian Wilkes. And because they're actually, in addition to wanting to ask Ian to pay tribute to Bob Manfuso, there's also some horses that I see that Ian is going to send out later in the week. Still plenty. He's got a Ghost Zapper colt for Anita Cawley and making a 3-year-old debut. Certainly on Fire Baby's mom. And so we'll ask about that one. And Ian's also got Letter Storm for Nursery Place, Candy Ride Philly, that is going to cut back the turf sprint and put on blinkers. So we'll talk about those with Ian as well. And Ian joins us now. Ian Wilkes, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Ian, everybody okay? The kids, the grandchildren, the barn staff, everybody?
Yeah, all good. That's good. You know, all good so far. Very unique times.
How are you handling the stabs between Gulfstream and Tampa?
Good. It's just the unknown factor. You know, that's the big thing. We just don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So until you hear otherwise, you're just going to campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, have you thought about the situation and has? I mean, obviously, Gulfstream continues on, past Florida Derby Day. If there's no place to go, you would keep the horses at Palmettos and so forth and Tampa, too. I mean, and just you know, deal with the condition books opportunities if they're, you know, as they are laid out?
Yeah, that's my plan, because this year I'm stabled at Palm Meadows and Ocala. I'm in Ocala at Lamb Home. I rented a couple of barns over Roy Lehman there, and so it gives me the option. I'll run at Tampa, the odd ones there, and run at Gulfstream, but I'll stay put for now until we get, you know, as soon as Kentucky becomes available, we can know what's going on there. We'll plan on being back for Kentucky, but in the meantime, we can still race here at Gulfstream as long as we keep racing, and Tampa, they keep racing. We can still run some horses here.
Well, and you've also how many horses are back in Kentucky? Because you've been running a Turfway over the winter too.
Just a handful. I haven't got
handful?
Many there.
Okay.
Yeah, probably next year I may leave a few more there. It was just a last minute thing. I left a few there, just figuring it out. Next year I may leave a few more.
Well, there's a couple of horses I do want to ask you about, but the motivation for the call, the passing of Bob Manfuso, and Cricket Goodall joined us at the end of yesterday's show. I wanted to get another tribute in from another close professional and personal friend, and you and Tracy and Carl and Wanda Nafsker, a long, long friendship and association with Manfuso and Katie Voss.
Yeah, it's sad. You know, we lost an icon for the racing game, a man that was, you know, good to the game. You know, everything he did was about the game. He knew how to do things right, you know, from owning racetracks to owning horses. And it's a sad loss, you know, and he's a good friend.
And, you know, you guys had, there's been a lot of common breeding. You guys have bred horses together and campaigned some. I didn't realize until I looked that Carl was co-breeder on Court Folly.
Yeah. Going back, maybe out of a mare confidentially, I think, could have been the mare, if I remember right. Maybe. They were, and Court Folly was my first Breeders' Stakes winner, Bob owned, and That was special. Won the Amsterdam and Saratoga.
A mammoth upset in a four horse field, and he ran down Songster.
Yeah. Songster was 1-9, and Calvin Burrell rode him on Court Folly. And I still remember the race like it was yesterday.
Well, and I remember the call from Tom Durkin when it was getting to the late stages, and he asked, "Could it be Court Folly?" And it was. I didn't realize that was your first. I'm sure we've talked about it before, including at the time, but I didn't realize that was your first graded stake win.
Yeah, and to come there, that was always special to be at Saratoga. You know, that was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had, and in fact, maybe tomorrow, Casey and I talked about maybe playing. I've got about a 20-minute segment from 2016 with Bob Manfuso that I want to play so that people can hear from him directly. Yeah, it was when Catherine Sophia was tearing it up, he was so proud, he and Katie, so proud of her accomplishments.
He was. I know. He called John every week. John Service. He called him every week to check on the filly, and he was just so proud of that filly, and well deserved. I'm glad he got to the highest echelon in his career to win the Oaks, a breeder of an Oaks winner, and that meant so much to him. That meant a lot.
Well, I knew we had a unique opportunity to, you know, have you. You know, contribute to the voices, and one of the real tragedies, of course, here at some point, I don't know, maybe when Preakness finally gets run and scheduled and run, maybe that's when there'll be a tribute with people on hand. But there's probably so many people that really want to pay tribute and say goodbye to Bob Manfuso. It's Yeah. This is a circumstance that's just difficult for everybody.
Yeah, I agree with you, you know, and yeah, they're going to have, you know, I don't know when, but I know Katie mentioned she'll have a celebration of these, of Bob's life. And a lot of people asking, they would love to know when it is, because he did. He touched a lot of people in this game, and he's well respected.
Very much. It was one of the real, it was a real thrill for me to get him on. I mean, I just, oh, when I would see Manfuso and Voss horses, you know, it's funny because there's breeders in the game that you just, you know, you pay a little added attention. You see them in the program you know, you just know that, you know, there's people who breed a nice horse. And so,
yeah,
you know, particularly at the beginning of careers, you take note. Dean, I appreciate it. Let's spend a minute or two before I let you go. And I do see that you got maidens potentially going on Friday at Gulfstream, and Mrs. Cawley. And how about her homebred Ghost Lore making the three-year-old debut? This is a Ghost Zapper colt out of the nice Ornate.
Yeah. Yeah, he's coming off we turn him out, give him a break. Ran into some nice horses last year with this horse.
Yeah.
He ran behind some really good horses. And I think the horse has got some really good potential. He's been training very well. So I'm actually quite excited getting back to the races.
It's a mile and a 16th on the grass. And that's the craziest 5 furlong turf work I've ever seen. Was that with 57-4 with the dogs, dogs couldn't have been out.
That was on the fence. That was
okay. Yeah. I was going to say that's not with dogs out.
No, that was on the fence. Actually he worked with, the state filly, and they went together and just wanted good work in them. And the track, well, no, we've had no rain, so the track is a little quicker right now. And when you're down on the fence, they do get quite a fast time.
Yeah, I'd say 57-4. I'll look forward Friday to Mike Welch and the Clocker Report comments on that one. I feel bad for Anita and Bob. They'd love being at the racetrack, and so they'll have to watch from home. How about in the fourth race, where Nursery Place has got their nice, what looks like a nice candy ride.